When the Dalai Lama accepted the Congressional Gold Medal earlier this month, George Bush was there to salute him, the first U.S. president ever to appear in public with the exiled spiritual leader from Tibet. Our next guest, actor Richard Gere, was there too. The longtime Buddhist has been accompanying the Dalai Lama on his current travels. Of course, Gere still is making films, and his recent movie, The Hoax, is out now on DVD. It's the true story of writer Clifford Irving, who in 1971 perpetrated an elaborate scam by pretending to be the authorized biographer of the reclusive Howard Hughes. Irving generated faked interview transcripts that helped earn him a lucrative advance. The Hoax adds to a resume that, for Gere, already includes such films as Looking for Mr. Goodbar, Days of Heaven, American Gigolo, An Officer and a Gentleman, Pretty Woman, Unfaithful, and Chicago. Terry spoke with Richard Gere earlier this year and asked him about one of the most memorable scenes from one of his most popular films.
An Officer and a Gentleman, another movie that kind of struck some kind of chord, particularly because of that last scene where you walk into the place where Deborah Winger's working, and you literally like pick her up and sweep her off the feet, and everybody applauds, and it's like, how many times is that going to happen in real life?
I remember a story.
But it struck this chord, yeah.
Well, there was this, Bernardo Bertolucci was a friend of mine then, and we were talking about doing another movie, and he said he'd seen Officer and Gentleman. He said, I like the movie very much, but I said the ending is very fascist. And I kind of let it go, and then he said something else like that. And I went, wait a minute, what do you mean, fascist? He said, well, you know, when the army comes in the factory and the workers applaud. So there was an element of that. I never thought it would work, and I cautioned the director. Said, "Let's we don't have much money. Let's cut this scene and shoot something else that we know is going to be in the movie." And he said, "I know it's probably not, but let's shoot it anyway." And so we did it full out, and everyone, you know, filled it with the emotions that were required. And I still was kind of skeptical, although it was a gas shooting it. You know, it was kind of a rush. Shooting the scene, coming into this factory of women workers, and I had that vanilla ice cream naval suit on, and picked her up like Sir Galahad, and I never thought it would work. And frankly, it wasn't working great until Taylor got the right music under it, and then he found the right rhythm, the perfect rhythm for that music. And it, even for me, it worked.
I want to ask you about American Gigolo, which was written and directed by Paul Schrader. And you play a very high-class escort in this, who's hired by mostly wealthy older women.
The word now is a sex worker.
Yes.
That's
Thank you.
That's the international term.
Yes, and you're often hired by older women who are visiting and who either want a thrill or just want to be desired. Particularly desired by somebody who's really attractive.
Beyond that, even if you really look at the root of it, it's just treated well.
Uh-huh.
They just want to be treated well. Someone to notice them.
Let me play a short scene. This is a scene from early on where you're in. It's like a restaurant or a hotel bar, and you're glancing at an older woman played by slightly older woman played by Lauren Hutton. You think she wants to hire you, and she's doesn't realize you're a pro, and she's flattered by your attention. So here's the scene from American Gigolo.
Why did you come on to me?
Like I said, I made a mistake. I heard you speaking French. Often in these big hotels, you run into women from foreign countries who may need a translator or a guide.
And they hire you?
Yes.
How many languages do you speak?
Five or six.
Plus the international language.
That's right.
So that's Lauren Hutton and my guest Richard Gere in a scene from American Gigolo. Did you realize when you made this scene the ways in which it was going to resonate culturally? And I think one of the ways it resonated culturally was just in terms of, I think the most iconic scene in the movie is like when you're taking your clothes out of the closet and of the drawers and you're laying them out on the bed.
That was so far beyond me. First of all, I don't think I even owned a suit at that point. And this was all Paul Schrader.
Mm-hmm.
Paul had this thing about, I think he called it the new dandyism. And he was very prescient about this. It was Giorgio Armani. It was very stylized clothes. And I mean, this whole thing about shirts and picking out a tie that went with the shirt and the thing and all. I mean, this was a total construct. I didn't know anything about this, but I went with it and I said, okay, let's give this a try.
It's funny that it didn't become famous as like a crime story. It became famous.
No, it's about style.
Yes, you know,
exactly.
It became famous for style. Yeah,
but that's what it was, really.
Mm-hmm,
it
mm-hmm.
really was about two-dimensional realities, magazine realities, mm-hmm. you know, and a kind of tendency, especially in the West, to see things in surfaces. But yeah, I mean, this was Paul's idea, which it was way ahead of its time, of people being sucked into two-dimensional surface realities.
Mm-hmm.
With the body, with the clothes, with the hair, with the right sunglasses, with the walk, with the it's all about presentation without substance. So you see this guy systematically being stripped of all style, all surface, and ends up in jail, leaning up against a glass window, where he touches the girl through the window. They put hands up against glass. Someone who has to start from ground zero. And actually build a human being now instead of a Cupid doll.
I'm so glad that you describe this as being a movie about people who are sucked up in two-dimensional realities, because that kind of answers the question that I was going to ask you. You know, most people know that you've been, practicing and studying Buddhism for many years, and of course, you know, the kind of, you know, narcissism and materialistic culture that the character in American Gigolo represents is exactly what Buddhism is about not doing. It's about kind of transcending.
I'm thinking of a scene in the movie that actually is the opposite of that. And mm-hmm. you can't play these things and be, I mean, you can't be two-dimensional playing a two-dimensional person. You have to be three, you have to show the possibility of three plus dimensions,
mm-hmm.
and that it's been squeezed into two in the story. But there's a scene in there, as I recall, where he's surfacing a woman, and I think her husband has paid me to do this, and he wants to watch. And she's very, she's nauseated by this. And if I'm remembering the scene, I just tell her it's all right, just relax. And forget about him. And I was just very nice with her, very gentle and, in his way, sensitive with her. And within his own structure, he's a mensch. Now, in terms of the world and what's legal and what isn't, he's a bad guy. But within what he does, he is there to provide his service in a very real way and takes it very seriously. And those are real human moments in the movie.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Were you already interested in Buddhism then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been practicing since my early 20s.
You know, I know that you know the Dalai Lama, and he's pretty famous for different reasons, of course. But you've had to learn how to deal with fame. I wonder if watching him and how he deals with his own kind of fame has been interesting and valuable for you.
It's had an enormous impact on me. I don't know any actor or artist or anyone else who, by inclination, wants the negative side of being famous, the lack of privacy, the sense of being in a fishbowl. Nobody wants that. And I see His Holiness go through that his whole life, since he was 2 years old and he was discovered. And the incredible patience and grace that he deals with that was enormously instructive to me.
I read that you were banned as an Academy Award presenter back in around 1993. While presenting an award, you used it as an opportunity to condemn the Chinese government for the occupation of Tibet.
It was slightly different than that.
Yeah, explain what happened, because I just read about it.
I wasn't condemning. I mean, I certainly told the truth, but my whole thing with the Chinese is that for them to do the right thing is good for them. For them to do the wrong thing is bad for them. Forgetting everyone else. If you have any concern for the Chinese, they're creating a horrendous future for themselves by being not compassionate and being bad in the present. So my approach with them is really just to encourage them to be the best government, the best people that they can be, and to treat everyone else like brothers and sisters.
But anyway, so you use the Academy Awards as an opportunity to say something
sure,
about
absolutely.
China. Were you warned beforehand not to do that, or did they explain why they banned you afterwards?
I don't know why. I mean, obviously I spoke, and the powers that be were not pleased, which was okay with me.
Was the orchestra trying to play you off as you spoke?
No, I don't think they were. I think I went into some slightly mad monologue about something similar to what I just said, and then I presented some award. I even forget what it is now, what it was. But it was, there are 6 million Tibetans inside of Tibet. There's about 150,000 Tibetans who've gotten out, and they need our help.
And just one more thing on this. Did you get a letter saying, "Dear Richard Gere, you'll never again present on this stage"? how did they let you know?
No, they told my agent. They said, "He will never, ever, ever be on this stage again." So.
Well, I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
Enjoyed it.
Richard Gere speaking to Terry Gross earlier this year. His film The Hoax, in which he stars as bogus biographer Clifford Irving, is now out on DVD.